Support for Commodity Week comes from the Friends of WILL and from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign. With crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com.
This is the May 3 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists today include Matt Bennett of Bennett Consulting Channel Seeds out of Windsor, Illinois, Bill Mayer from Strategic Farm Marketing from right here in Champaign County, and Dan Zwicker at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. Commodity Week, of course, a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online at willag.org. That's willag.org. It is public radio for the farming world. Let's get a list of questions that we might want to run through, or at least some ideas of what folks are thinking about. Matt Bennett, what's at the top of your mind today?
Well, I think the obvious one that I would want to talk about is with the recent run-up in prices, just how everyone feels about sales levels that guys ought to be at, and what kind of incremental moves they might make, first of all. Second of all, obviously the weather has been interesting, especially for folks in the upper Midwest. So in that situation, I'd like just an updated idea of what everyone thinks we might be seeing for some acreage adjustments, especially with the difference that we've seen in these price moves.
Bill Mayer of Strategic Farm Marketing.
I would agree with Matt's assessment on the acreage. I'd like to see what people's thoughts are on that as we've gone through the spring here, especially on the corn side. And to take it one step further, where do we see, any adjustments being had here as we go through the summer in the carryout on corn, on the 17 crop corn carryout? Where does everybody see that kind of coming in?
And finally, Dan Zwicker.
Oh, I suppose an item that kind of hangs in the background is export trade, how that may or may not impact us either positively or negatively as we go forward, because nothing's really been settled, at least on that front.
Okay, so I think I want to start there, and maybe we'll start with you, Dan, just because this week, of course, a couple of the high-ranking Trump administration officials are in Beijing. They've been meeting about NAFTA, and I think they have one again next week. And they're saying, you know, we need within 1 or 2 weeks of that particular meeting to have this NAFTA agreement wrapped up, or at least the beginnings of it done. What are your considerations, and does this bode well or ill for agriculture?
Well, one never knows, but I guess I'm in the opinion that when the dust off settles, a renegotiation of these trade agreements and trade policy throughout the world is going to be beneficial to agriculture. I know in the short run, the farm organizations and farmers and the anti-Trump news media has really trumped up all the negativisms of China maybe putting on a tariff on soybeans. And I think that's one of the reasons why soybeans keeps wanting to go higher or won't break, is because just here like a month ago, I think when we talked, the news media was leading with it. And I think that just, you know, anything that's possibly negative toward Donald Trump, the mainstream news media leads with it and just drums it up. Otherwise, they would never worry about a farmer or soybeans. They don't even really know what a farmer or soybean is for the most part, I think, the New York news media. But I think one thing that we have to sell more of, and that is agriculture and more food. And there is no way China, if we do get into a trade war with China or Mexico or European Union, it's going to be worse on them than it is on us, because we're the ones that have the trade deficit. And this trade deficit was basically compounded by just weak leadership, presidential leadership that we've had over the past 25 years. They've let all these foreign countries step on us. But as a country, we cannot afford to have an $800 billion deficit. That's exporting jobs, that's exporting wealth to other countries, and it's lowering the standard of living of the U.S. Consumer. And I think that is good, about to change. The problem we see, you can look at, is that we're fighting over a smaller pie. The pie keeps getting smaller, and everybody wants a bigger piece of it, and everybody wants to protect that piece that they have. But we can't, as a country, afford to continue with these large trade deficits, and something has to be done.
So in this case, I will defend the news media. They, more often than not, will follow the news. And in this case, agriculture, or the farm country, has played a major role in the Trump administration, and he has played that role out of the Oval Office. So I think they've done the right thing covering it. Now, let's talk a little bit about the marketplace. I know, Dan, that you're feeling pretty bullish. I'd like to hear both from Bill Mayer and from you, Matt Bennett.
Well, you know, we've been awfully hesitant to date to make a whole lot of corn sales. I've been fairly friendly to the corn market. I've said all along that being friendly to the corn market is all fine and well, but you don't want to get too distorted in your viewpoint. For instance, whenever I look at December corn closing today, 422, you know, that's a nickel higher than anything we saw last year. Obviously, whenever we get rallies like this, that's whenever we get the most bullish. If I hadn't made any sales to date, by all means, I probably would step forward with an incremental sale and get started at the very least. If it's your worst sale, then you're going to have an awfully good year. And the reason why I say that I think that it's not a bad idea is that most of the producers that we work with, if not all the producers we work with, can make money at normal type of yields at this type of price level. So if you would have told us going into, say, the January report that we were going to see 422 December corn here at the start of May, most people would have said you're crazy. And so in that opinion, in that realm, I guess I want to make sure I keep my perspective. I don't want to get too off, leaning too awfully hard one way or the other, even though I still have a friendly bias to the corn market.
Bill Mayer, how about you on that subject area?
Well, I think we're at a pretty critical area here right now on the corn side of things. If you look back at the past 4 years, or the last 3 years, and then look at this year, and you look at the fall lows, at the harvest lows, and you look at the summer highs, in those years that we've gotten the nearby weekly chart through that 399.5 area, $4 area, we've been able to make a run up into that 430 some area, close to 440. And right now we're just right there from the standpoint of the nearby weekly chart. So I guess I think that's kind of the track that we're on right now. I think that we've got a situation where with the northern tier of states and the problems they've had this spring, it's certainly possible that we may lose some corn acres up there, or at least not add any corn acres. And if we look at our demand side of it, I think that, as I asked in our opening question there, I think I see the ending stocks of corn continuing to come down some. And as long as we're doing that, I guess I believe that we have a chance to continue to have these little waves like we've had, where we sell off a little bit and then we move up and make some new highs. And I agree with Matt wholeheartedly. I think a person needs to take advantage of that. And we're just kind of trying to follow our plan, where we started with some initial sales to cover uninsured bushels and want to continue to sell into this with the idea that we could get up into that, you know, December corn level of testing those previous 16 and 15, 2015, 2016 highs, and kind of go with the idea that's where we want to end up getting our pre-harvest sales done.
Now, Dan Zwicker, I know we've talked before about this since probably January. You have been feeling friendly to the corn market. I'm fairly conservative on this. I suppose if I had corn to sell, I would have made sales by now. Would you have, and where would, what would you do today if you had not?
Well, I just like to play the seasonal odds. Year in, year out, if you play the seasonal odds, you're going to end up doing a pretty good job of marketing. The only time you really want to get aggressive early in a calendar year is when you're coming off of a short crop or some very lofty prices that you've already destroyed demand and you've already increased production prospects. And, you know, basically for the last 2 years, we've been tracking sideways and we've come off of record crops. So, you know, I've been kind of, you know, in the opinion, it's kind of like when you go to a bar at 7 o'clock and, you know, you can stay out in the toward the back and do your visiting. And as you get closer to closing time, then you get closer to the bar. So you get that one last round of drink before the bartender shuts it off. And I think I think we got another month or two before we need to get up to the bar and get that last round bought. Now, you know, seasonally, you know, about half your highs are made during June, July, on corn and soybeans. There's only been two highs in corn over the last 40 years. May December corn has only had contract high or a calendar year high in May in 2 years over the past 40. So I'm in the opinion of the corn market's got more room into it as we go on into the June timeframe.
Do you know which 2 years?
Yeah. Let me pull it. 2000 is one of them. And 2000 was basically a sideways year. It was a long term. It was basically a sideways year. And then 1978, we had a May high. And that we were coming off of a big crop after 1977. We had a low down around $2 or $1.80 or whatever it was. I forget what it was. And of course, those were the days when you had set asides and the government tried to, you know, balance the supply demand table through set asides and whatnot. So we had then basically a low, I think, in September around the Farm Progress Show. It was, I think, in Decatur that year. And we basically rallied into May, and the weather, the crop got planted early and nice, and we had favorable weather, and that was the end of it. But other than those 2 years, corn has never made a high. So but that doesn't mean this could be the third year, does it? I mean, those are statistics, but the odds still say until we get the crop planted, until we get the crop further down the road and what we would consider that we've got a crop made. Now, we'll argue about what made means, but you got to get it planted. You got to get a good rain in it on June before you can kind of get that far down the road on it.
Can I pin you down? Would you have corn sales made?
No, I would not have.
Okay, that's what I and would you make sales now? I'm going to guess no.
Well,
again on that one too.
I want it as an individual, but I also know that a farmer can't always do what he wants to do because he's got the banker breathing down his back to price his stuff. And I think the bankers are probably more in control of marketing these days than farmers really want to admit. And I think they're going to be the culprits at the end of the day that sold farmers out at $10 when we go to 12. So the bankers are going to have a lot of red faces, I think, come next winter by advising farmers to sell these $10 soybeans. I just think soybean market is set up like it was here a couple years ago when everybody sold $9 beans when we went to 10. This year, everybody, you know, you got people selling half a crop or three quarters of a crop at $10. It's such a sure deal that these $10 beans is profitable. So I think they're all going to get their head handed to them before the year's out, and we're going to be at sharply higher prices. Now, soybeans, seasonally, you can begin to talk about, you got to get a little nervous. We're, you know, we're getting closer to closing time on soybeans. Beans do have more May highs in them. And then, of course, June is totally loaded up with highs made during the month of June. So we're getting a little closer to the closing time on soybeans, but I think we got a little ways to go yet, probably on corn.
So, Matt Bennett, I want to talk about the South American second crop corn in Brazil. It's been under drought conditions for quite some time, 30 or 40 days without rainfall. Mike Tenora told us during the closing market report on Thursday that the dry season has come earlier than usual there. He doesn't have much expectations that this crop will get any better. What does that tell you about prospects for the price of corn short term? And I think it was 2 years ago that we were in a similar situation.
You know, that's the thing that we've talked about that before. I know that I've spoke about it a lot this winter. Part of the reason I spoke about it is because that first soybean crop went in the ground a little bit late in places. And I said, you know what, this safrinha crop could be susceptible to dryness because it's going to be coming into maturity a little bit later, not to mention the always possibility that you have, you know, that the dry season is going to start a little earlier. So what's it mean? Bottom line is this world carry continues to be ratcheted lower. We're looking at 30 million metric ton plus, lower than last year, just to begin with, year-on-year change. Some people are clamoring for China to really cut into that this next marketing year. You know, if the Brazilians end up with, 5, 6, 8 million metric ton less than what we originally thought, you know, and some of the experts for a long time have been in this 85, 86 million metric ton camp. And so if they're at that level or lower for the entire Brazilian crop, by all means, that's supportive to our market. Our exports will continue to be a welcome surprise, and it's not just going to be here throughout the rest of this marketing year, but it's going to be, probably at least 6 months into the next marketing year until they get a fair amount of corn to where they can actually get in the export market. I think that it's very supportive to the market. It's part of the reason that I've been friendly to the market is because I wanted to make sure before I got too bearish that Brazil, you never know what they're going to have down there. And they definitely cut into our business last year. If they don't do that this year, man, I think that it's a really good sign, especially given all the other factors such as acreage and things that we've already briefly mentioned.
Is consumption strong enough that we might end up changing the 17-18 carryout for corn?
Well, I think that it's a possibility. You know, obviously, with the quarterly stocks here last go around, it was a bit of a bearish surprise. But I do think that you have the opportunity. I mean, ethanol grind's still been awfully good. You know, there's still a lot of mouths to feed on livestock. I think that this export number could continue to be a pleasant surprise. And so are we going to ratchet down the carryout enough to cause a drastic rally? No, I don't believe so for this marketing year. But what I think everyone's looking forward to is for this next marketing year. I mean, you cannot make the assumption that we're going to have 177 bushel corn every year. So obviously this corn has gotten into the ground a little bit later than most people would have preferred. That's okay. A lot of folks still haven't even sniffed being able to plant corn in the upper Midwest. If you cut back past 88 million acres, maybe to 87, you're going to need a whale of a yield to end up not having a serious situation this next marketing year for the carry out for next marketing year. So that's the one that I'm keeping a much closer eye on versus this marketing year.
Bill Mayer, when you think about consumption patterns in the U.S. for corn, you suggested that you wanted to know about whether there might be a change in the ending stocks. I think you believe there could be. What might it be, and how's it driven?
Well, I think you pretty well covered the bases on the export side of it. I think the Brazilian second crop corn being less is going to give us, if nothing else, more time that we're going to be exporting corn without their competition. And if we look at the livestock numbers, I guess I think there's still some adjustments there too. If you look at the all areas of livestock, it's somewhere between 4 and 5% higher as far as numbers go. I'm not sure the USDA is totally taking that into account on their supply and demand. So I think there's some adjustment there as well. And I agree with Matt. I'm not sure that we see any big adjustments that's going to cause any big rallies necessarily on this current crop year that we're in. But I think it definitely keeps a support under the market and allows us to look at situations like if we do have any kind of weather problems, and that, as Dan was mentioning, during the growing season, we could see some rally because of that on the new crop corn.
Have you folks there at Strategic Farm Marketing started your weekly, and I think you do this occasionally, meetings during the growing season? Do you have an idea what planting progress has looked like, other than what USDA gave us on Monday afternoon?
Yeah, we actually had our first one a week ago, and it was really a little bit surprising where some of the lateness was taking place, especially in the Mid-South. I was surprised Kentucky, Tennessee areas, where we have quite a few clients, they're behind, and there they like to get the corn in the ground before May 1st, or they risk some of the summer heat causing some problems. So that was kind of a surprise to me. The upper Midwest, of course, was still trying to dig out of snow a week ago, and we're talking about the, you know, how many feet of frost are still in the ground. But that's improved quite a bit here over the last 10 days or last week, and they are starting to see some progress up in those areas. But as Matt said, it's late, and I don't think we're going to see any larger amount of corn acreage. As I said earlier, I think it may not mean that we have a cutback on corn acres, but I don't think, if we'd had a very early spring, I think we could have added corn acres.
So, Bill, I want to follow up with you just a little bit on those areas that have not gotten as far along maybe as you thought they might, especially in the Mid-South. They've been wet, and it appears that they're going to remain wet. How much of a problem does that really become? Maybe it's the export market in August and September, where we might see some bids that would be better along the Illinois River, I guess. But you tell me.
Well, I think you could see some maybe basis levels in the fall or, you know, early late summer that could be better. I don't know that it's a huge flat price deal right now. It has again, as I said about the northern tier. It has improved here over the last week, but they are still wet. I think you probably see some shifting of acres. I don't think it's going to be a huge amount of acres because there's, you know, not a great number of acres in those areas. But it'll be more of a local basis type problem, I think, than what we'll see from a national standpoint.
Matt Benn, I'm going to come back to you on this topic for just 1 second. In the northwestern Corn Belt, and maybe not so much in North Dakota because they didn't have this snow and probably were able to go, but parts of Iowa, that northwestern corner through a good portion of the large planting area for corn in Minnesota would have been really covered by snow for a while. They had to dry out. How far along are they, and does that make much of a difference for you?
Well, it definitely makes a difference. You know, actually this morning I heard from two producers from Minnesota who told me they haven't turned a wheel yet, and really no one has turned a wheel. One guy said he wouldn't be surprised if the planting progress for Minnesota is zero on Monday once again. And so a producer I talked to in South Dakota yesterday said that they're actually going to sow some oats today, but he wasn't quite there to where he could plant corn. He's a little wet yet. They'd gone through the thaw. But as you know, once you go through the thaw, then you got to dry out. And so obviously they're running behind. I asked him if it was going to change their acreage mix, and he said it's very tempting to change the acreage mix because with November beans in this 1040, 1050 area, it's a pretty good moneymaker for them still. And it really doesn't take a whole lot of arm twisting, if you will, to get them to make that switch. So I think that if the weather isn't ideal here for the next 2 weeks in the upper Midwest, you're going to see some acreage, fluctuation. I'm kind of like Bill. I don't necessarily think that we're going to get carried away under 88. But if you do anything under 88, I think that it's certainly going to be viewed as quite friendly to the market, because some people kind of were a little skeptical that 88 was even the real number to begin with. And so you have to be a little bit cautious there, because there is some fluctuation from the spring number to the end of June number. But bottom line for me is what that says is that weather is going to be even more scrutinized this summer than what we typically see, because you could see a huge pendulum swing as far as carryout goes if you have 87, 88 million acres with a
say a 168 or a 170 yield, it's definitely going to cut into the carry significantly.
And I think we need to put that into perspective as well. And from the standpoint of, I don't think that with the problems that the North is having that, you know, they're going to lose the crop here or anything, but we have to keep in mind that, and I think Matt said this earlier, the last few years they've been raising corn yields similar to what we've been doing down here in the, you know, central part of the Corn Belt. And I think that may be what we see is, you know, back to some levels that are more on the average side of things in those areas.
That, and they've had a limited number of prevent plant acres as well. So it'll be interesting to see how all that turns out there. Dan Zwicker, now when you mentioned $12 soybeans, where actually do you see on both the corn and the soybean charts at this time potential for the markets?
I think the next 2 weeks is real tricky. I guess it's the, you know, it's going back to that May 15th, May 20th time frame, and at that point in time, we'll be able to kind of size up the planting pace, the crop conditions, and blah blah blah, and whether or not we lost acres or gained acres, and whatever kind of stuff. But if the trade, you know, begins to feel like the crop is off to a real shaky start, and there's potentials that we've lost some acres here and there, I think the market is just totally explosive. Beans could probably rally right on into August. Corn could probably rally all the way into the fall. I think you'd have a counter seasonal move in corn all the way into the fall months. Soybeans may go all the way into maybe like September, August, September. Beans would probably peak sooner because we'll be talking about big acres in South America and whatnot. But it's kind of the way I'm looking at it from a cyclical point of view is how important was that low that we made during all that China tariff talk? If that goes down as a real hard early seasonal low, this thing has got a lot of potential on it. The corn market just looks to me like it's going 50 cents higher. The bean market, farmers are big cash short. The commercials are big longs in the bean market. They own the opposite side of that farmer, and they have for the last 50 cents or more. Farmers don't have hardly any old crop beans. They got upwards of half or more of their new crop beans sold, and I think that's just, you know, a keg of dynamite with a cigarette burning pretty close to it to take off and, you know, blow through $11 like Grant took Richmond, and the way we're off to $12. So I kind of don't want to discourage anyone from selling. If there's anything I've learned in being a market advisor for all these years is farmers know what they need to do to kind of keep their operation running and keeping everybody happy. But it just looks to me like we've got everything set up for an explosive market as we go through 2018. And I guess we'll kind of go from there.
Let's get a final word from each of you now. We'll start, Matt Bennett, with you.
Yeah, I think that as we move forward here, I'm like both these guys and with Dan saying the next couple, 3 weeks is important. I think maybe for different reasons, I agree the next couple, 3 weeks is very important. I think a lot can happen as a producer. I definitely want to have some sort of a marketing plan laid out, though. You know, I understand that the market looks really good at this point. The problem that I see is that we've been here before and we've gotten bit by getting too friendly to the market whenever we were at price levels that we could make money at. I definitely want to take a little bit of a bite out of it as we move higher.
try to keep my sense to me and not get too friendly to the market. And I think that we'll average out in really good shape here in 2018 if we have that kind of a plan moving forward.
Bill Mayer?
I just want to kind of continue with what Matt was saying there. I guess I'd say over the next 60 days, the odds, as Dan had said earlier, tell you that that's typically seasonally the time that you really have to make some decisions. How are you going to approach it? What cash levels are you willing to sell if you get the price levels that you're targeting? What levels are you willing to get some puts on or make some sales with some call coverage or maybe do some hedging? Those are questions that need to be answered now and not in the heat of the battle, which is probably going to come yet over the next month or month and a half.
Man, Dan Zwicker.
Well, I just want to remind everybody that my opinion is free. I am not charging for my opinion. So you're getting free advice. So it's free. So, and there's no free lunch in this world. One of the reasons I can be a little more outspoken today than what I have been in the past is because I don't get a paycheck from anybody. I don't have no boss having to come around the corner and tell me to do this or tap this down or tap that down. I'm down here in Waco, and it's just raining like cats and dogs right at the moment. So we're going to have a good hay crop, good corn crop down here, as well as cotton. And but farmers do need to, you know, they know who they are. They know how much money they have to keep the operation floating for another year. And farming has never really been an industry where you make a lot of money. That's why my folks chased me off the farm 50 years ago. They said, go get a college degree. And if you want to come back, you can come back. I decided never to come back once I got used to 5 days of work. But when you look at agriculture profits, they're only good for 5 out of 30 years. So you got 5 years of good times and then 25 years of just barely scraping by. And that's where we're at right now.
Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. You may listen to the whole of our program online at WILLAG.org. Our thanks go to our panelists this week, including Bill Mayer of Strategic Farm Marketing from right here in Champaign County, Illinois, Matt Bennett of Bennett Consulting Channel Seeds out of Windsor, Illinois, and Dan Zwicker at Zwicker Consulting from Waco, Texas. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.